Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow.
And welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way to learn about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined by top London radio DJ, certified Japanophile, and Ed Sheeran's bestest friend, Pete Donaldson. How are you doing, Pete?
Pete and Ed sitting in the tree. You know, we're like, Chris, we're like two peas in a pod, and that pod is a house that we live in, me and Ed Sheeran.
I'd be lying if that... If I said that made much sense.
No, but, it's fine. Just roll with it, Chris. It's fine. How have you been, man? You all right? I've been hearing you've been rather busy. You've been doing a lot of editing recently.
Yeah, after February, we didn't have that many videos because I was travelling around a fair bit. And this month in March, I've just been hammering them out. There's been so many videos. I was up until 8 a.m. yesterday morning.
That is grotesque. Like,
it's when you edit, right, you get like really focused. You get really into it. And then you kind of look up at the clock and what feels like 5 minutes to you is actually 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to get this video done. I was like, no matter what, this video will be done. So I stayed up all the way around to 8. And I looked up on the... There's light outside and I uploaded it and then I collapsed. And yeah, so that was my morning. But I ordered a Domino's pizza, so I'm ready to go again.
Not again. Every time we record a podcast, you order a pizza and then you go into a catatonic kind of sleepy situation halfway in.
It was your treat.
You deserve it.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not going to talk about pizzas this time because I don't want people to think this podcast is sponsored by Domino's or some awful thing like that.
Sponsored by McDonald's.
Speaking of McDonald's, I went to McDonald's today and kind of for lunch. So before Domino's, I had a McDonald's. This isn't making me sound good at all.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, you're in the country that has some of the greatest food, more Michelin star restaurants per square feet than anywhere else in the world.
You say that, but Japanese McDonald's, the burgers are like crafted with like real swordsmanship. Burgership. There's real craftsmanship that goes into McDonald's. When you open a burger in the UK, you're lucky if it's all there in one piece. It's kind of a bit sloppy, big bloody mess for your Big Mac. Whereas in Japan, it's kind of crafted to perfection.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd dive in and grab a quick burger this afternoon. And while I was there, I discovered something that I didn't know, but I should have definitely found out years ago. And that is that Ronald McDonald, King of McDonald's, Ronald McDonald, in Japan, because they can't pronounce the letter R, the R sound clearly, they've given him a different name. They've called him Donald McDonald.
Donald McDonald. How is
Donald
that allowed?
McDonald?
He's known everywhere else as Ronald McDonald. Just do that.
He's
funny
Donald
little...
McDonald here.
It's what like I like sort of name it, I give I... myself. Pete Donaldson McDonaldson.
The clear lack of effort, though. It's like all the other names and all the possibilities. They could have called him like Takeshi McDonald or something. But
I'd love that.
What should we call him? Ronald McDonald? Donald McDonald. That'll do it, won't it? Yeah, Donald McDonald it is. Like, lack of effort.
I discovered that Coco, the Pixar film, was called something else in Japan. Because I got a friend... Got another friend in Japan, Chris. I don't want you feeling incredibly jealous.
Not
but
the only one.
On Facebook, she had a picture of some promotional materials from this Coco Pixar film. And it had a completely different name. It was the name of one of the major songs in there. But
what I do know is that they do change a lot of the movie titles in Japan.
Yeah.
I made a video about it a while back. Some weird names, aren't there? What was the craziest one? Do you remember?
I really enjoyed
Fast and Furious.
Where was it Kevin Spacey inside a cat? Man inside cat. Yeah. That was the worst thing, wasn't it? It was inside cat. Suggests something rather untoward. I love it.
Thor Ragnarok was Mighty Thor Battle Royale, which sounds... I thought it was like some sort of special Japan spin-off, but unfortunately, it was just the same film.
Yeah.
But given this Donald McDonald situation today, this amazing life-changing fact, I thought we would do some amazing facts about Japan that you might not know, but might possibly know today. 12 amazing facts, one of which was Donald McDonald. So you've already got your first...
I mean, that's kicking off strong,
facts.
Isn't it, Chris? I'm having that all day. I'm having that every day. And twice on Sundays, to be quite frank. That's enjoyable.
Well, that's one for the office water fountain, isn't it?
Yeah, massively.
Guess what Ronald McDonald's called in Japan, Roger? Which is what your colleagues probably call. All right. And I'm going to link each of these amazing facts to one another in a way so seamlessly you won't even notice.
This is so well planned,
that
Chris.
That makes sense.
I have to say, this is quite enjoyable.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? All right. Right, let's dive in. 12 facts about Japan, starting on fact number 2. So, in Japan, there are more pets than children. There are 21 million registered pets, dogs and cats, and that outnumbers the number of children under the age of 15 at 16 million. So, more pets than children.
It's like, I mean, I guess
I didn't
people
know
are more into cats and dogs than children. But they talk about the Japanese population, the populace is shrinking a little bit, isn't it? Because people aren't having babies, people aren't having as many babies as they used to do, so there's no one to look after the old people. So now it's just coming over and buy pets. There's not enough room, though, surely. Is there enough room to keep to swing a cat in your bedroom or your house?
And my apartment is probably big enough for one small cat.
Right.
But yeah, no, I mean, the reason there's so many cat cafes around Japan is because you can't obviously have a cat. It's banned. So that actually surprises me. But I'm all for that because I don't like children. I despise children.
Oh, come on now. Especially the ones in Japan. They're adorable.
You say that, but I live in this apartment block that looks like it was built like in some sort of Soviet era. And there's like 10 kids that play outside the back. And I'm 4 stories up.
Yeah.
And I can still hear them, not like clear as day, as if they're in my room with me. So whenever I'm trying to film something, you can hear...
That's nice. That's a little
absolutely
bit of,
mad.
That's a nice little bit of atmosphere for your videos, I think it's fair to say.
No, it doesn't, because it sounds like I've got a kid in my closet or something.
Yeah,
it just sounds like
news.
A muffled scream. So it's like, hello everyone, welcome back to my channel, and then you hear... What's that in the cupboard?
Nothing, it's Natsuki.
Fucking nightmare. Absolute nightmare. So children obviously use diapers from a young age, the age of like 2. I'm not a diaper expert. Which leads us into our next fact, coincidentally, which is there are more adult diapers sold than baby diapers in Japan. 68,000 people over the age of 100 years old in Japan. But it's been the case since 2011 because 26% of the population are seniors, as you'd expect. There's lots of diapers sold to the elderly. What do you think about that?
I think that's... I mean, what do you want me to say, really? I mean, it's a very necessary thing.
I want shock, horror responses.
I think that's a good idea. I think when you gotta go, you gotta go. And, it's good that you don't wet your trousers, to be quite frank.
When you see, like, a roadworks in Japan, you get loads and loads of workers who often stand there all day, like, waving a stick, right, waving traffic along. And I heard that they stand there for so long, like, in the rain, that they actually wear diapers, so they don't have to go to the toilet.
That is undignified.
It's horrible, isn't it? It's pretty undignified, yeah.
Japan does have a massive overemployment kind of, not problem, but like they do overemploy. And so these men are just employed with these shiny sticks just to, you know, let cars into an intersection or let cars out of a car park or let cars of a building. And they don't do anything apart from just wave. Their jobs could effectively be replaced by a little light.
Yeah, it feels a bit like the New Deal. Like, you know when Roosevelt did the New Deal in America and he made up jobs just to spare, like, to get people working again.
Yeah.
And they had, like, people, like, going along buildings with balloons to try and get, like, birds off of buildings and whatnot. It feels like you get those kind of jobs in Japan that don't seem necessary at all. But diapers.
Well, I mean, you could join the diaper-creating industry, I suppose. I don't know whether they import them. They might make them themselves. I don't know.
But while we're on the subject of work hours, that takes us to point number 4.
Bang!
Amazing fact number four. In Japan, it's so seamless. In Japan, it's acceptable, right, to take a nap, even during work hours.
Ah, Inemuri.
Yeah. Inemuri, it's called, yeah.
Inemuri.
And I used to do it. It felt really awkward and weird. Like, I'd teach like two classes in the morning, and I'd often be pretty tired at that point, or maybe even hungover. Not that I probably shouldn't have said that, but well. So I might have been hungover. So,
it's all right. You're out of the business now, Chris. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm not in the business anymore. Not in the teaching game.
No.
But they had like a little room around the back of the staff room. You go in there, and there's a tatami mat floor and a little pillow. And you go in there and you can like lay down and have a sleep. But I always felt really bad about it.
Yeah, would you be sleeping with other people? Would they be next to you? Could you spoon them?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes you get like, yeah, you like wake up and turn over and there'd be another teacher just like laying there snoring a few metres away in this little tatami mat room. It's so surreal. Mm. And yeah, it's quite a nice idea. I'm actually...
It is.
Like, Japan's work policies are like not good in terms of overtime, but that is... It's actually one of the good things they have. Although, we in our staff room, we had like 100 teachers. I worked in this, it must have been the biggest, I think it was the biggest senior high school in North Japan that I worked at.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of teachers, and there was you often get teachers who sit at their desk and just fall asleep and nod off. So you'd look up and you'd hear like, shh, from across the other side of the room, some Muppet falling asleep, snoring. And none of the other teachers, because everyone's so polite, none of the other teachers would go over and wake him up. So this guy would just be there snoring for hours on end.
Oh, no,
and I didn't want to be the one who goes over and be like, "Oi, what are you doing, mate?" And like prod him with a stick or something. What with being the outsider.
Yeah.
It was a daily conundrum I faced by the snoring teacher.
That is a little strange. that is quite strange. I mean, what I would venture is that if you go to any nightclub or any bar, people have a little 5-minute snooze, little siesta, and then they're up and about again, and they continue their evening, which I think should be introduced in every nightclub around the world. I've tried doing that myself in England, and the bouncers don't like that kind of jazz. To be honest, they're very much no nonsense when it comes to throwing me out when I fall asleep in a nightclub. But you see it all the time in Japanese bars and Japanese nightclubs. But work-wise,
yeah, they let it go.
Work-wise, I think a little siesta in the middle of the day, especially if you've had a heavy night the night before, is a really good idea. Like, I'm so much more productive because I'm freelance. I sort of start work at various hours. I work very late, but sometimes there'll be an early start. Like this morning, I had to go and watch a bloody film, which sounds like a nice thing, but not at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and when the film's not very good, it's 10 times worse. Yeah. Who watches a film at 9 in the morning? And and I always have a little quarter of an hour siesta in the afternoon. It's it doesn't take that much to get back on top, really. A little quarter of an hour, a little 20-minute.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
I love a good nap, especially after lunch. Yeah,
huge.
Especially after lunch.
Huge.
Which takes us on to fact number five, which is in Japan. I think you know this because you've been here loads, right? Which is you eat until you're 80% full.
Incorrect,
you don't
Chris.
Stuff yourself.
I eat all the food. I feel terrible.
You do. But it's like common courtesy, right, to leave a bit of food on the plate. Because food typically comes on little plates, it kind of makes that easier to do. But it means that people think this is one of the reasons Japanese have live long lives, because they don't overeat. Whereas we get a big plate, right, in the UK, covered in stuff, covered in like five varieties of food, all jumbled together that we eat, and then we want more. Because of little plates, they eat a lot less, so they don't ever die.
And also, they do die, Chris. Come on, we spoke about that guy last week or the week before.
Oh yeah, mummy dude,
the mummified man whose family was basically stealing a living. Yeah, one of the things I noticed in Japan is when you're eating certainly breakfast and stuff like that, you'll get a little bit of natto, which is like a kind of sour kind of soybean dish and stuff, sticky soybean. I've acquired a taste for it. But and a couple of other things, some pickles and maybe a little bit of fish or something. But on the side, there'll be a bowl of rice. And rice is kind of used in Japan, from what I've seen, as kind of like something that just kind of bulks up the meal a little bit. So if I was going to leave 20% of my meal, it would very much be the sticky rice.
Yeah, right. And it's they always have refillable rice. It's like have unlimited rice.
Bottomless rice.
You like typically eat the food with the rice, kind of you mix it together. Yeah, it's their answer to just like everything, like bread and pasta. Bread and pasta, they go for rice.
Have you got a rice cooker at home, by the way? Because I went to China for a few days and I was eating a lot of congee for breakfast. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with congee, but it's just rice boiled until it is like bloody wallpaper paste. It's like this kind of porridge, but it's rice. It's completely tasteless. They add like a little bit of chicken broth to it, sometimes frog's legs, sometimes an egg, sometimes one of those old, like, million-year eggs or whatever you call them, those old eggs that have started, you know, going off. And it's kind of delicious, but kind of quite dull, but it's incredibly hot and satisfying. It's like, oh, that's quite a nice way to start the day. So I bought myself a rice cooker and boiled the absolute crap out of some rice. And I think I did it twice, and then that rice cooker is now under my sink, and I've not used it in a very, very long time.
You use it twice?
Yeah, it's terrible. It was only 10 quid, be fair.
That is frighteningly cheap.
Frighteningly cheap.
I did have one in my old apartment, but I don't like rice. It just makes me tired, and I just feel fat when I eat it.
Yeah.
The only time I really enjoy it is with sushi, so...
Yes, okay.
Other than that, keep me away from it. And risotto.
I feel so fat. You've had McDonald's and pizza today, Chris.
Don't judge me. Don't you dare judge me.
Give you a little bowl of rice on the side of that. Can you get rice in McDonald's? That would be interesting. Can you get a little bowl of rice if you want it?
No. McDonald's menu in Japan is pretty much the same as every other McDonald's around the world. With the occasional special weird burger or
Oh God, yes, we spoke about that a few weeks ago.
I
remember having the Spider-Man kind of black burger, black cheese, black bun.
Oh God, yeah.
For a little while, that was
exciting.
It was
awful.
It wasn't very good. It was just. It tasted exactly the same, but much less appetizing, to be quite frank.
While we're on the subject of food, Paris is good food, doesn't it?
Oh, Chris, that's one of your worst. Which
leads us into fact number six. Amazing fact. And I think a lot of people know this, certainly in the UK, where it was featured on, I think, on TV. Is it QI? It was on there that Japanese tourists are often so disappointed and shocked by Paris, they have a Paris syndrome. Called Paddy Shokogun. And the idea is they get to Paris and they're so shocked by how different it is to what they imagine that they get physically sick, they have kind of some sort of mental disorders, like depersonalization and anxiety.
Right.
And that's the Paris effect. You ever think about that? That's such a surreal thing to have a syndrome for. And yet I was in Paris last year and I had a similar kind of shock as well. I think I experienced Paris syndrome myself, but it's actually a big deal.
That was mainly because Natsuki was with you, but with Paris syndrome, like, it's hard to understate the love that the Japanese have for Paris and have for France.
Yeah.
They are obsessed, you know, every second kind of advertising ploy is about boulangeries and, you know, fondue and kind of, you know, the Breton strike
English,
and stuff like
it's
that.
Like the most common language. French is the most common language you see everywhere, like on bakeries and stuff. They've seen the movie Ratatouille, and they think Paris is just like that, when it's not.
You only have to look as far as the Tokyo Tower, for crying out loud, which is a slightly taller pastiche.
Same design, isn't it? It's one of those cities that I was really torn over. If it shocked me, I can certainly see why it would shock Japanese people. But, like, yeah, you get people, like, come up to you on the street and ask for things. Like, when we were there with Natsuki was having a cigarette, walking down the Champs-Élysées. It was like a movie. And some woman came over and started saying to him something in French. And Natsuki looked at me really confused and afraid. And then she was like, I want a cigarette. And he was like, oh, okay. And he gave her a cigarette. And that's like, doesn't happen in Japan, ever. Well, it doesn't really happen in the UK unless you've already started talking to the person. It's not often you get people just walk up to you and just ask for a cigarette. But that really shocked him.
No,
you get people like come on the train and start singing and ask for money. Like it's a really funny old place.
Well,
like, you go down one street and it's beautiful, and then the other street is a hellhole.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very mixed city.
The Japanese do have a very romantic vision of the French, and when they get to Paris, they do have these sort of emotional problems. But I remember being in Tokyo and being in a group of people drinking on the streets and stuff, and we were just, you know, having a few drinks before I went somewhere else. And there was this Parisian, I think he's an IT consultant guy, but he worked in Japan, basically. And all of the Japanese people had this very sort of romantic vision of... I think his name was actually Marcel, which is the most stereotypical French name you could possibly have. And he was like... and everyone was going, oh, he's so romantic, he's such a, like, he's such a sexy French boy. And this man... Like, they didn't speak much English, so, like, this man was, like, this, the rudest Frenchman I've ever met in my life. And if you've ever met many Parisians, like, it's like, wow, that's pretty rude. He was, like, he would point at my, I had my collar done up to the top, and he was like, ah, you are Pierre, you are an homosexual, eh? And I was like, you are so rude, Marcel, and nobody knows. And everyone's going, oh, isn't he sexy? Like, no, he's rude, he's a rude French man.
The Adventures of Peter Marcel.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And he was drinking like, is it that? Is it Shoshu and like an alcohol pop, basically. It's like 9% or something. It's disgusting.
Oh, Strong Zero, probably.
Yeah, Strong Zero, that's the one. Disgusting.
Strong Zero. Nightmare drink. Well, I went to Paris. So last time I was in Paris was in May last year. And that leads us on to fact number 7. In Japan... months don't have names. Only
have a word with everyone.
I think if you know you're Japanese, you'll know this fact. This is a fact for people that don't know they're Japanese. But yeah, months don't have any names in Japan.
Wow,
it's a much more practical system. It's just month number 1, month number 2, month number 3. Ichigatsu, nigatsu, sangatsu.
So gatsu presumably means month.
Yeah, gatsu is month, and then we just add a number in front, and off you go. Nigatsu, sangatsu. Once you know your numbers, you can do a lot of things in Japanese. Actually. Yeah, numbers are the key. They use numbers a lot more practically.
Yeah.
For example, Shigatsu is spring. And in spring, there's a festival, right, called the Penis Festival.
What?
That's fact number 8.
Holy moly.
Another great way in there, right? Why did I think this was a good idea to connect things?
I'm enjoying it. I'm a DJ by trade. I'm enjoying these links, to be honest.
It's very clever, but you know this. So I think this is another one a lot of people know about. But I thought I'd bring it up just because people don't, and it still has that kind of shock factor. And that is, there is a fertility festival in April in the city of Kawasaki, and they basically parade a massive. have you seen it? A massive phallus through the streets of like Kawasaki.
I've seen bits of it. There was a guy who worked for Radio 1 who went out there to celebrate it with them. But it's not as sexy as you think it might be. It's actually quite it's workmanlike.
It's a little bit creepy, yeah. I mean, it started in 1969. And it's the festival, they've got loads of like toys and sweets and vegetables, and I say vegetables like carved vegetables. Look at the photos of this stuff; it's amazing. but the worst image is like they have a penis in the shape of a. When I say phallus, not penis, that's going to have to tick the explicit box on iTunes.
Oh no!
They have a phallus, which is a lollipop phallus.
Lick that lollipop.
Just talking
about
it makes me feel uncomfortable, to be honest. But if you type in like this festival into Google, and you'll see some pretty unsavoury pictures of like kids with these lollipops, and it will make you feel super uncomfortable.
That is disastrous.
But I've been people have asked me to go for years. They're like, oh, Chris, go to the penis festival. It's like, how about no? I don't want imagery of children holding dodgy lollipops on my videos.
Incredible.
Horrible, isn't it?
There's a penis museum in Iceland. And it's just penises of the world and the animal kingdom and stuff like that. So, you know, you've got from the great sperm whale, excuse my turn of phrase there, to the smallest little field mouse. There's penises, there's basically all penises and formaldehyde and stuff like that. There's even donated penises from men who've sadly passed away.
Come off it.
Who basically say, but the inscriptions next to them.
And you've definitely been to this museum, right?
I've been to them. I bought a lollipop.
Of course you fucking have.
I bought a penis lollipop. Oh. I actually, you know those little room cleaners, those little There's little hoovers that are like robots. Those little circular things.
Yeah.
And they go around. I set one off in the penis museum. I saw one under a table.
What?
And I booted the start button and it just started going around the penis museum. I was like, oh, I need to leave now. I've done something terrible.
That's a great thing to have on your bucket list. Trigger a robotic hoover in a penis museum in Iceland. What a great thing on your to-do list.
Not bad, is
it? I'd love to go to Iceland. It's on my hit list, and that is definitely not going to be on my list of things I do when I go, I can assure you.
Especially
the bit about the hoover.
I did accidentally eat, it was like a kind of, it's like Icelandic kind of, I know this is abroad in Japan, but we're popping into Iceland briefly, Reykjavik.
Well, we've covered the geopolitical situation of France,
Iceland. Right? I had like one of those starters where you eat like, I didn't realise, but it had like whale, it had shark in there, had all of like the bad things you should never eat, puffins.
Right.
I was chowing down to a bit of fetid shark, because there's a shark that they bury for like 30 days and it becomes rotten and they carve off the fat and it smells like a bin. It's disgusting. It tastes even worse. It's very bouncy and chewy. Ugh.
Did you get any photos of it on your phone?
Yeah, probably. I'll try and find it. It's not very nice. It comes in its own little kind of hermetically sealed jar because it actually absolutely stinks.
Well, the reason I ask about why you got any photos on your phone is because, did you know 90% of phones sold in Japan are waterproof?
Chris.
And have been waterproof for over a decade because young women are so attached to their phones that they take them into the shower. Japanese phone developers made them all waterproof like 10 years ago, before all your iPhones and your Samsung universes or galaxies, whatever they're called, were made waterproof. So, yeah.
that's fact number nine. There we go, fact number nine. Almost all of the phones in Japan are waterproof. What's the excuse for the last 10%? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. you're really missing out, aren't you?
Thoroughly wash your manly body.
Wow.
Yeah.
Japan's phones are like, used to be amazing. I remember like in the early 2000s, you'd see photos of Japanese phones and it'd be like, They looked like they were 20 years ahead of us. They had like 3G while we were all still on 1G or 2G, whatever it was.
Yeah.
They all had like aerials in their phones so they could watch TV and listen to the radio. They all seemed really far ahead, and then they completely buggered it up and got buggered by the iPhone.
Right.
Once the iPhone came out, it was all downhill for a lot of Japanese phone manufacturers. But they often say Japan is Galapagos syndrome, where because Japan's like this island and the consumers here have very different tastes to the West, they kind of have these products that are just so odd and so far removed from what we have.
Mm.
And I guess a great example of that's K cars. You know K cars right there.
What's a K car?
You don't know K cars. So in Japan, you get two types of car, white plate and yellow plate. White plate is your standard vehicle.
Yeah.
And then there's K cars, which are vehicles, I think they have to have, I think they're about 600cc engines.
Right.
Maximum of maybe 600cc. And they're usually a little bit smaller. They've got a yellow number plate and they have less taxes, less toll road fees when you're driving around. And they're a lot cheaper to run as well because they're good on fuel consumption.
Yeah.
And so K cars don't seem to exist any other place in the world. Or if they do, it's not that big a deal. But in Japan, everywhere. I'm not sure what the proportion of the population owns them, but I do know a lot of people in their 20s tend to have K cars over standard cars because they're just a lot cheaper. And you find most people in Japan don't actually travel that far across the country. If you're going to travel across the country, just go on a bullet train, right? So,
yeah.
I'll have to show you next time you're over. We'll hop in a K car.
Okay,
and I'll show
K-car.
You how awful they are at driving up a hill with a 600cc engine. It sounds
fantastic
like a van when it's going full out.
Well, from what I've seen in Japan, like it's everything's flat, and then until you get to the tallest cliff ever, it's like flat, 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 tallest cliff ever, flat, 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 flat.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
It's all right. And from the cliffs, you can see one of the 6,852 islands that make up the archipelago of Japan, which is fact number 10.
Right,
Japan has 6,800 islands. Only 430 of which are inhabited.
That's it. That still seems like
Although,
a lot, to be honest, Chris.
To be an island, you only need 100 metres of circumference.
Like, where do you live? So, I live on an island.
I don't know where all these islands are. Well, you look at a map of Japan, it's very hard to see them all. But I think a lot of them are just actually dotted around the edge of the country.
Yeah, okay.
Like, for example, Cat Island, which is about an hour away from Sendai,
right,
is like in a little bay right next to Japan, right next to the coast near Sendai. But it's still an island, obviously. And there's lots of little islands that run alongside the country.
It's
odd communities isolated from the rest of Japan out there.
Maybe it's like even more Japanese than the Japanese, because obviously, you know, island nation, Japan.
Yeah.
I want to be the purest. I want to be the most Japanese
of
the Japanese.
Of Japan. There was an island near where I used to live in Yamagata. I don't know if I talked about this before. An island called Tobishima.
Right.
And there's a boat that took about an hour to get there. I've only been there once, but I absolutely loved it. There was only about 100 people living on this island.
Mm.
And the island was about the size of, it's impossible to say, really, the size of 1,000 jumbo jets. I don't know. How do you define the size of an island? Is there a measurement system?
They usually compare things to Wales. They always compare things to the size of the UK country, Wales. Iceland's only as big as Wales.
Actual whales, the animal.
Well, they're variables.
This island was the size of 1,000 blue whales. took about an hour to get around it, or an hour or two to go around the whole shoreline.
Right,
but it used to be like one of the places where the pirates lived in the Sea of Japan. There used to be lots of pirates in the Sea of Japan. Now, they were called something like the Midget Pirates because everyone was getting so pissed off by these pirates who came from Japan, China, Korea, all over the place, that they called them like the Midget Pirates.
Ah, I see.
Because it was like a derogatory term. These midget pirates lived on this little island. And so I was going around looking for treasure, and I didn't find any treasure, but I found this cool little shrine hidden in the forest that took me half an hour to beat down loads of trees to get to it. Mm. There's a real sense of adventure there.
Yeah.
The midget pirates of Japan.
Didn't you once astound and upset a friend at school or another school teacher at school by saying you wanted to be a pirate?
I did, yeah. It was really awful. When I was teaching, I had to give a class once to students about what I wanted to be when I was a kid. You know, and I said, well, when I was a kid, children, I wanted to be a pirate. Who didn't want to be a pirate back then? You know, with Jack Sparrow Pirates of the Caribbean, and there was all sorts of those pop-up pirate. You know, there's all sorts of.
I've got a pirate
cool
on my leg,
stuff.
Tattooed on my leg. That's why I can't go to Onsen's.
Oh yeah, what's his name? The guy from Monkey Island,
Pirate LeChuck from Monkey Island 2. Yeah.
Yes. not guy Brush Threepwood.
No, I'll get him on the other leg, I think. Eventually.
But I think that was the first time I liked pirates because of Monkey Island playing that.
Yeah.
So we had Monkey Island, pop-up pirate, and Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
All signs were pointing towards being a pirate. And then I realised that pirates weren't even real. But I gave this talk and I was like, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a pirate. And the teacher looked at me in front of the class with this shocked expression and was like, but Chris Sensei, why would you want to be a pirate? Why would you want to kill and rape people? And I was like, oh, and all the kids looked at me and I was like, well, children, and I kind of had to just slowly shut up and stand at the corner. But while I was in school, I was amazed. It turns out, right, I was always amazed by students.
I smell a link.
The literacy rate in Japan is 99%, apparently.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, that's fact number 11. Amazing fact number 11.
And presumably you helped.
Highest literacy rate in the world. Mm. Well, I didn't help because that's Japanese. I ruined
true.
It. I lowered it. So whilst the English education system in Japan is formidably shit, they actually handle teaching Japanese pretty well. Like, all students can read, 2,000 characters by the age of 15. The only thing is, it takes a long time to do this. I think they start around the age of 6 and they finish at the age of 15. So it's like a 9-year process. And the way they learn is just through rote learning, sheer rote learning. So where you have to write the character out over and over again. So it's not fun. Like, you see students doing this over and over. It's so awful, but it works. It seems to work, you know.
Yeah.
Highest literacy rate in the world.
How many characters do you know, do you reckon?
So I use this book called Heisig. I mean, we'll talk about learning Japanese in another podcast, but I think I can speak about 1,000... I think I can read maybe 1,200, 1,500 characters.
That's pretty good, isn't it? Bloody hell.
I certainly could a few years ago. These days, my level's a little bit gone down because I don't read that much anymore.
All right, yeah.
But at my peak... I was about 1,500.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, back in the good old days. but the interesting thing is, I didn't use rote learning. Well, I used kind of rote learning, but I used a whole different process, and I could learn 100 characters in a day. So while students took 9 years, I was able to kind of do the same amount in a year through a completely different memorization technique. And that's why I don't like the Japanese education system in many ways. It's very old thinking. They use these old processes that they've used for hundreds of years that don't really work. Well, they work, but they just take so damn long to work. So, but that's a story for another day.
When you were learning your kanji, because, the three writing systems are Japanese, hiragana, katakana, and they're for, so katakana's for borrowed words, hiragana's for Japanese words. But then mixed in with the two is the Chinese letter writing system called kanji. Now, they're like the very complex, kind of confusing characters that, you know, I look at and I go, what the flippin' heck is that? Unless something looks... but some of them are actually quite kind of straightforward once you know them, but it's picking out one that looks very similar to another one. That, for example, there's one, I think, that means man, and it's actually the sign for rice field and power, because historically... the power of the rice field the farmer and the man.
That's what makes learning kanji so fun. You're learning a character and you have to learn two things. One, how it's pronounced, and two, what it actually means. So I learned how to look at a character and know what it meant. So I could look at a character and know that it meant like man or chocolate or biscuit.
And
I don't know why those three examples sprung to mind in particular.
Going into a shop, man wants chocolate biscuit now.
All the 1,500 characters I could have drawn from, those are the three. I don't even think there is a kanji for biscuit. Anyway, but you could look at a kanji and know what it meant, right, by looking at it. And then you'd have to learn the pronunciation. The pronunciation takes years. Learning what it actually means takes minutes. You know,
right.
Learning how to read them all is a bitch, especially as... all the characters tend to have more than one reading. Some have, you know, up to five different readings. So,
bloody hell.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky stuff. It's pretty tricky stuff. But it is important to learn them, you know, so you can read words for, like, you know, danger. You need to be able to read the word danger, right? Because it's important to avoid danger. Take, for example, the Titanic, which obviously...
Where's that come from?
The Titanic, it was riddled with danger.
Riddled?
But did you know that the only Japanese man who survived the wreck of the Titanic, Masabumi Hosono, was actually called a coward in his country for not dying with all the other passengers?
Oh.
It was seen as like a shame that he didn't die. Yeah.
I know this podcast is
about
the Japanese.
Last fact.
That was the last fact. A man was
the only
a
Japanese man
dying.
Who survived. The only Japanese man who survived had his day ruined. Think about that. You've survived a whole ship going down.
Yeah.
Thousands dead.
And he goes home.
You get home to Japan and they're like, oh, for fuck's sake, Masabumi.
Masabumi.
Why are you still alive? You should have gone down with it, you muppet.
He wasn't the captain, was he? Because that is
the
rule.
He wasn't the captain. I don't know what. I think he was just a passenger having a little boat ride.
That's disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's horrible, isn't it? I actually watched Titanic last week for the first time in like 10 years. Who knew that watching a boat sink and lots of people dying could be so entertaining? It is a good film, isn't it?
It is good. I get a bit emotional when I see this when I watch the Celine Dion music video. My heart will go on.
Yeah, I try and avoid that bit.
And there's the
I try
bit
and avoid
where,
that bit like the play.
And there's the bit where I think they were the owners of some kind of department store, I think, the old lady and the old man, and they hold hands as the water rushes in around them and they die in their cabin. It's like, I get a bit emotional, to be honest. So if I'm a little bit hungover, things like that, set me right off. Watching Marines being reunited with dogs, footballers retiring.
Well, if you look, the film is pretty factually accurate.
Yeah.
Imagine, I wonder if they've actually got the Japanese guy, Masabumi Hosono, like in shot, like running down the ship, or like on one of the boats that got away. I guess there's a shame
suckers.
Because women and children were the only ones that were supposed to go on the escape like on the like rafts, right?
Yeah.
So how did he get on there? You should have, you know, cheeky sausage. Anyway, we've learned lots of surprising facts this week, Pete.
Can I thank you for these facts? They've been magnificent in every possible way.
Well, when you're standing around that water fountain with Roger. Or the rest of the Absolute Radio team, you can now whip out the story of Titanic and the Japanese guy that survived it, or the literacy rate, or the islands. There's so much to choose from. But we've learned some surprising facts. So I thought for this week's vocabulary, speedy Japanese lesson, we're diving into some words for surprised and amazed.
Cool.
I've only got three this week. I'll keep it short and simple. You probably know the first one. And the first one is amazing. What do you think amazing is in Japanese?
This gets used all the time.
It's word everywhere,
Sugoi. Sugoi!
Sugoi ne! Yeah, sugoi. This word, I think we talked about it in the last video, didn't we? How superficial it can be when people are like, it's amazing, just by everything that happens. But learn sugoi and you can instantly understand like 10% of Japanese television.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic word. What about the slightly less kind of amazing word for, what about great?
Oh, great.
You kind of go, wow, that's great. With less impact than sugoi. Subarashi.
Subarashi. That's a nice word.
That's,
I like
that's one of the
lot.
First few words you learn. It's one of the first kind of things. Yeah, Subarashina. Subarashi. It's like, oh, that's great. Wow, it's great. Splendid.
I'm going to rate. And, I'm going to remember that by remembering the car brand Subaru. Subarashi.
Yes, yes. I think that's how I did it as well. And the last one, you've obviously been surprised as well as amazed by these incredible facts.
Yeah, I know. Right?
What is the what is the verb for surprised? To be surprised?
Not a clue. I'm not even going to venture this one.
It's bikuri. Bikuri. So you kind of go, oh, bikuri shimashita. Bikuri shimashita. I was amazed. Bikuri. It's kind of like to be shocked and amazed. It's kind of like
right,
that
okay.
kind of amazement. You know. Bikuri shimashita. I was surprised. I was shocked kind of thing. All right, let's dive into Wacky News of the Week.
Yay! My favourite time.
This is mental. This Wacky News of the Week is... It's not so much wacky as ridiculous.
Right.
So three schoolgirls were recently indicted following a free all-you-can-touch breast stunt in Tokyo. I can't believe this. Three schoolgirls went to Shibuya Crossing. I think there was two guys with them. And they stood near the Hachiko statue, Hachiko the dog, by the crossing, and let people touch their breasts, fondle their breasts for free. And I think they were filming it.
Right,
like,
I mean...
This is actually something that is... I did a video on this about 3 years ago. There was a charity event where models would let, like, 100 guys touch their breasts and fondle their breasts, and the girls stood in a line, and guys came over, fondled their breasts, and donated to the charity. And, you know, it was pretty controversial at the time. I was shocked by it. Your silence seems to say you think it's a good idea.
I think it's rather grim, to be honest, Chris. I think it's rather exploitative. But
it's for charity. No. It must be good.
I don't think the charity wants to be involved, to be honest. What was the charity? That's what I
can't remember
know.
What it was. It might have been for breast cancer, actually.
Oh.
It might have been.
At least there's a link there, I guess.
But does that make it better? I don't know. I need to actually go back and look at my own video for that. But these three schoolgirls did it for money. Now, there was no... When you did it, it was free. But they said they wanted to make money from making a YouTube video about it and then monetize the video. So they want to get ad revenue from a video of their breasts being fondled in Shibuya.
Oh,
and the police came over and they were like, what are you doing? Literally, what is going on here? And they got buggered for it.
I mean, why didn't you think of this first? You could have had people in on the Hachiko entrance of Shibuya Station. People could touch you up.
That is like the number one tourist destination in Japan, right?
Yeah, it
people
really is.
Always say to me, oh, let's meet by Hachiko statue. And I'm like, no, I'd rather die because it's so damn busy. So the idea of like three girls standing there with their breasts out, like being fondled. It just blows my mind, but it's a real thing that happened.
Why would you want to be filmed touching a lady's boob for free in the busiest? It's like Leicester Square or Times Station.
They might have made some people's day for tourists coming to Japan. That's their first day in Japan, jet lagged and coming out of Shibuya Station. They see that and they're like, oh. This is Japan's better than I anticipated.
In Tokyo, in Shibuya, sort of towards the Love Hotel kind of district, there are a lot of sex workers, effectively, on the street soliciting for people. And I remember sort of walking up and they were... and one woman came over and went, are you okay? I was like, yeah, just a bit jet-lagged. And she went, do you know what's good for jet lag? Sex. And I was like, is it? I'm not sure that's scientifically... proven.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah, so she didn't actually say sex. She described a sexual act that I'm not going to go into now.
Right.
But I imagine that there was no free boobs on offer there. Very much a financial transaction.
Oh, God. Pretty grim, isn't it? Yeah, Shibuya is a pretty bad play. You walk through Shibuya and you get harassed by so many people, especially after about 9 or 10 p.m. I was there just last week and it can be quite intimidating and annoying. I think it's more annoying than intimidating.
Massively.
You get these people like... Oh, massage, sex act. And I'm not going to say the sex act, but they'll just shout out loud.
I would very much like it if they shouted sex act.
Censored it. But it's pretty grim. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It makes me get angry.
Stay away.
Yeah.
Stay away.
Stay away. So you guys have been sending in quite a few emails recently, which is great. I'm glad the Abroad Japan podcast email address has been so well received, despite its long title. First one is from Billy Merrill. Great podcast. I love listening to it on my morning commute. Why isn't the show called A Broadcast from Japan? I feel like you've missed a real treat there. I must admit, when I announced this podcast, loads of people were like, why didn't you call it a broadcast? And it dawned on me that that would have been bloody brilliant. Why didn't we call it a broadcast?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I'm very, when it comes to actually getting projects off the ground, I'm a let's do it and think about it later. Isn't always the best policy in many ways.
No.
But we'll get there, Chris. We could rebrand later on, I'm sure. Do you want one from Sean McKenna?
Do I want one?
Do you want, do you want one? Yeah. Do you want a sex act?
Go for it.
Dear Chris and Pete, thanks so much for the new and excellent Abroad in Japan podcast. Oh, stop, Sean. Stop. A question for you, Chris. That's rude. You've made many great videos about entertaining and educational topics around Japan, but are there any experiences which you've enjoyed but have been unable for any reason to capture in video format?
Well, breast-fondling in Shibuya.
Breast-fondling in Shibuya, wow.
Oh, God. No, I've actually never done a maid cafe. Because you need to get permission to film in there, and they can be pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And I've never actually even been in a maid cafe. It doesn't seem like my kind of thing. I don't like the idea of girls in high-pitched voices being all cutesy and giving me food and stuff. I don't know, kind of, it's everything I stand against, that and children. Yeah. So, have you been to one? You seem like the sort of person that had definitely gone to one.
Right. A, that's rude, Chris, and B... No, I haven't, because I find the idea of being waited on hand and foot quite mortifying at the best of times. And when that person is an attractive woman in a weird costume, that's even more upsetting, to be quite frank. And doubly, we spoke about the snack cafes in the first Abroad in Japan podcast. So it's kind of a reduced version of that, isn't it, really?
But it is a little bit, yeah. Yeah, I've never actually... That's another good point. I've never filmed in a snack cafe, a snack bar. Or a hostess bar or anything like that. Yeah. Just because it feels, you know, it's difficult. You need to get permission for those sort of places to film. Otherwise, it's going to cause all sort of problems. So those are the kind of places that I haven't filled in. Maid cafes, hostess bars, snack places. But I really want to, because there's a whole interesting underlying culture there to Japan. Yeah. And I'd love to cover it. So, yeah, it's on the hit list. It's on the hit list.
Have you ever filmed in Yoyogi Park at the height of a... dengue fever outbreak. Don't do that. Every now and again, Yoyogi Park will be closed thanks to dengue fever. And I'm always like, I've never heard of dengue fever before. I reckon it might be fun.
Sounds like a dance move from the 1970s. Park? Yeah. It's not that, is it? It's a terrible, terrible disease.
Oh, well, never mind.
Avoid dengue fever. last question here from Oliver. Oliver says, hey guys, love the podcast. I watched every single one of Chris's videos leading up to my first time in Japan, August last year, and they helped me out. However, do you feel guilty for making me violently sick after eating Family Mart fried chicken, which you so heavily recommended? Oh, no.
Oliver, your constitution must be so poor that you can't handle a little bit of fantastic fried chicken. I mean... It's,
you must have eaten a lot, to be fair.
Yeah, right?
I recommend Family Mart fried chicken in every video because it's fried chicken from a convenience store that is better quality than KFC and it's at a reasonable price of 120 yen.
It's so nice.
Have you tried it? Did I give you any while you were over?
You get some with like cheese added into it and stuff, like fried with the chicken. And it's just, it's something else, it really is. You get a little packet of... sort of soy sauce or vinegar to put on it, and and a little toothpick as well.
But yeah, no, next time you're over, Pete, you'll have to stuff yourself with Family Mart fried chicken. It is legendary. It is amazing.
So nice.
And
so nice.
Though you were sick, Oliver, I don't regret. I don't feel guilty for encouraging you to try it. I suspect you must have eaten quite a lot, although it is fairly oily. You get it in a packet. You get this little plastic packet, and you can tear half the packet off and eat it. But the packet becomes see-through after about 5 seconds because of the grease pouring out the chicken. But if you are, to everyone listening, do try Family Mart fried chicken. Don't dick about. Don't have Lawson's. Don't have 7-Eleven. No. It is Family Mart. I don't know why Family Mart do it. I don't know what their secret is. But Family Mart fried chicken, eat it. Eat it now. And on that note, it's time to say goodbye.
Our greasy voices... We'll be back next week for more Abroad Japan podcast.
Thanks for listening, guys. No matter where you might be in the world, thanks for listening. And if you have any emails, send us, drop us a line to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, guys.
And do us a favour, rate and review us on iTunes if your greasy fingers can handle it with with the keyboard and that.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.